What's up, everybody? New single from the Slackademics out, this one called Our Own Island.
Nothing to phone home about. You're just waiting for Godot. We're on our own little island. Tracy was in the sand.
This vibey reggae track is written by our drummer, Josh. Good job, Josh. I love this song, and honestly, it might be the most fun song we have to play live. Sadly, that doesn't help me understand what the lyrics are about or anything like that. Please give the track a listen and a share on the streamer of your choice. As I've mentioned before, the new Slackademics album, Pass Fail, comes out in April, but you can already pre-order it. Just $10 on our Bandcamp page. And the next Bandcamp Friday is March 6th, which means we don't have to pay Bandcamp any of their cut. On that capitalistic note, let's listen to the soothing sounds of one of our trumpet players, Max. Max, Max.
But there's no one, no one to see you through.
Remember that video, right?
Oh, that cat was amazing.
MC Scat Cat.
Imagine.
Which is some guy whose visage is embodied by a cartoon cat with Paula Abdul, of course.
I wonder why. Like, did he just feel like insecure about being in the video? Or they were like, we're going to make you a cat? And he was like, yes.
What if he's actually a cat?
What if he's actually a cat?
What if it's like a Milli Vanilli sort of thing where they have a cat doing the vocals, but they can't show a real cat on a video. So they have to do an animated cat so people think it's just a shtick.
This video was like revolutionary.
I loved it.
Hey, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Nevermind the Music. What are we going to talk about today, Mark?
I know who we're going to talk about. I know what song, but what I don't know is how to start.
Oh.
I've sometimes start with a little bit.
Yeah, you have like a witty quips usually.
I like little witty quips. I like starting with anecdotes, especially in season two when I have a little more brain space to prep. But I feel like we've already exhausted the boys to men small talk.
I have like a little bit of boys to men small talk relevant to this song.
Okay. Well, absolutely come save me because...
Okay. It's just, kind of witty.
Just a month ago or so,
we talked about
Boys to Men with Matt P. around the campfire on our Metallica episode. We talked about, you know, in our Eras playlist, we talked a little bit about Boys to Men there.
For sure.
Like season one, we talked about how, some episode you asked me, what are the first three CDs you bought and like which ones define you?
Right.
And for me, it was Boys to Men 2. Like we've covered this and now we are doing...
It's finally... We've arrived.
We've arrived
at the Boys to Men episode.
Boys to Men episode. But what's the small talk?
So when I hear the song we're about to talk about, I think of Stephanie Tanner. Do you know who Stephanie Tanner is?
How rude that you don't think.
No,
I know.
That's not the one.
That's not how rude. No, how rude is the little one? What is her catchphrase? Just hang on. I've got it. Oh my God.
Well, that's the whole point, Mark. She doesn't have a catchphrase because she's the awkward middle child that never got any attention.
She totally is. How rude.
She isn't. That's Michelle Tanner, the Olsen twins. How rude.
How rude.
Right?
I really think...
How rude.
Dude.
No, I think it's both of them.
If I
maybe?
Beat you on this, if I'm right on this,
I don't know.
Oh my God, you're never going to lose.
You burned me with the Oniris. I hate these edits that you make. You go in afterwards.
Oniris.
Like,
well, you mean fact checking shit that we say?
Like, yeah, just let me say what I want to say, buddy. You're like,
okay.
Am I right?
Full house.
How rude.
How rude.
Then what does Michelle Tanner say?
Oh my God.
How rude. How rude. How rude. How rude.
It's a whole YouTube video of a minute of just how rude after how rude of Stephanie Tanner.
Then what is Michelle Tanner's catchphrase?
I think it's rude that you don't know. Hang on. I'm looking
it's
up.
It's rude
I'm
that you're fact checking me. Just let me
wait.
be blissfully
ignorant.
I'm
not fact-checking you. I said how rude, and you corrected me. How is that me?
How rude.
Michelle.
I guess.
Catch phrase. Totally. I had it, man. Michelle, you got it, dude.
You got it, dude. It's the dude and rude.
You're in big trouble, mister. This is what the AI says. No way, Jose. Stephanie was the one that I identified with because she's exactly our age. I didn't really identify as much with DJ because she was too old. And I didn't identify much with the Olsen twins with Michelle because they were younger, right? I'm not a middle child, but I just sort of like Stephanie was the one that I thought was a cool character.
You have real like Kimmy Gibbler energy.
Thank you. Okay. What does this have to do with Motown? Okay. We're talking about Motown Philly, by the way, everybody.
When I hear that song, I see Stephanie Tanner at a dance recital. The whole episode's about her taking on too much, and she wants to be like the best dancer. And she's taking like a hip hop class, a ballet class, a tap class. And she's just really like throwing everything at the wall here, trying to be the best dancer. And she freaks out, like really freaks out. She's overwhelmed. And at the recital, she's dancing hip hop to Motown Philly. And she's like, freaks out and starts doing like ballet instead. And I think she's doing it to like...
Very postmodern.
But she's not doing it in that way. She's doing it in a way to signal to her parents that she's stressed and overwhelmed. So they like don't make her dance anymore. I think she like self-sabotages.
Wow.
In that episode.
I don't remember this, which is wild because I watched Full House all the time. Mm-hmm. And this was like my favorite group when I was... fourth grade or fifth grade or whatever.
In the Venn diagram of your interests, this would have been right in the middle.
But not of my memory.
No, apparently. Isn't that interesting?
But yet I remember how rude. DJ really didn't have a catchphrase, probably.
Poor DJ.
She was just
eldest daughter vibe for sure.
A lot of pressure on her. She was practically running the family with three father figures that were...
Yeah. So many Taylor Swift references.
They were each a part of a whole person, those
days. They were, and that was like the whole point. But so, like, what are we doing? Joey, well, how are you helping? He's like living in the alcove. He's got Muppets, right?
Muppets.
Remember like Woody the Woodpecker?
There was definitely a puppet involved.
No, Woodchuck. Woodchuck.
Right? It was a woodchuck, right? Or a groundhog, something like that. What's the difference?
Get any wood? That was this catchphrase. Okay. So dumb.
So the listeners know we are Xennials, just like Stephanie Tanner. So we're going to talk about Full House and Boys to Men at any. But look, if you're tuning into this episode, you knew who Stephanie Tanner was before anybody said the word Full House, right?
Cut it out.
Okay, that's Joey, right? Yeah. Joey. Okay, and watch the hair is Jesse.
Do they all have catchphrases?
I bet Danny doesn't.
Danny. It's so funny, too, with Danny, because he was so clean cut in the show. But Bob Saget's stand up is like so
stoner
filthy.
Comedy. Yeah. That is funny. Okay. So this song, Motown Philly, first single from 1991's Coolie High Harmony, which was an album I had on cassette. You probably had. No?
I don't think I had it on cassette.
Oh, you
maybe
had it on
CD.
CD. I did. My first CD was Boys to Men 2. I didn't have a CD player till middle school. So... what do I want to talk about today? Well, first of all, fast forwarding to later in the episode, this song maybe has a lot in common with this string quartet by Joseph Haydn.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Obviously. Right. I mean, it's the first thing I think of.
Right, sure. So this song hit number 3, first single from the album, produced by Dallas Austin, who is very much wrapped up in the new jack swing movement, which we can talk about in a little bit. Anybody listening to this podcast knows that I'm a Boys to Men fan, but I think I like Boys to Men incorrectly.
Okay.
And I think you maybe like them more correctly than me.
Obviously.
Because I think I like the stuff that other people don't like as much. And that includes Boys to Men themselves.
Okay.
So I feel like Boys to Men is best known for their ballads. They're slow jams, right? So something like this, End of the Road.
It's
It's a very good song.
It is a good song. Yeah. And people love it. People love I'll Make Love to You. Yeah. People love One Sweet Day with Mariah.
Yeah,
people love, and It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday feels sort of
so
different because it's a cappella. But still, it's the slow ballads, the love songs. Not love songs, but like the
it's like swoony.
Swoony stuff.
Yeah, you just want them to sweep you up in their sweater vests and like carry you away.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, was what they were the most into, too.
Oh,
and that's what they kept doing. These first couple albums have a couple like bouncy, dancey kind of fun tracks like Motown Philly. And that's what I was drawn to.
Right.
But Boyz II Men and the rest of humanity appeared more drawn to the end of the road stuff. So, you know, going forward, this is an album by then I had already mostly fallen off on my fandom. But this is Four Seasons of Loneliness from Evolution, 1997. And it's more of the mellow romantic ballad stuff.
Reminiscing, I love as I watch four seasons shift. Come through victory, legends, the air and just the snow.
And I imagine,
kissing you under the mistletoe.
When springtime. I love that song because it has the one that doesn't usually sing all the time as like the lead singer.
Which guy is that singing
that? The one with like the skinny face.
Sean Stockman?
I guess.
Well, he's like the high guy that isn't the belty high guy. So
right.
Like Wanya's the super emotionally plaintive. He's the more falsetto-y
guy.
Right,
he's just always kind of there. But this time, after years, they're like, this is your shot.
Well, he's got leads on some of the...
But
the guy who didn't get
prominent.
Many leads is Mike, the bass.
Yeah.
Right? But, well, he gets this, the
he's
talkie
the
parts,
coolest
right?
one.
Should I just pitch shift my voice down?
Yeah.
So... Though that one's a little art poppy, and I do like the ones that are... Mm. Like Water Runs Dry is a little more... When I was prepping for this episode, it made me think of Seal, which we did a couple months back.
There you got that bass.
You could really hear him too. They mix it in the mix.
I love Boyz II Men.
Yeah.
We don't say it enough.
It's only half the episode. And we have mentioned in previous episodes, they're no longer a quartet.
No.
Like they're
who dropped
singer,
out?
Mike. Yeah.
What happened to him?
In one of the season one episodes, we talked about how they have a This Is Pop episode. It gets into it a little bit, but not much.
Yeah.
He was having health issues, but also some conflicts, I think.
Yeah, I wonder.
I think because of that, like, he wasn't pulling his weight because
he
of his health.
Sick.
Like something, I think he has back problems.
Oh.
And so they don't have the low bass anymore. And they didn't replace him with like the guy from Rockapella or whatever.
From Rockapella.
Or the Tim Storms, is it from the, remember the guy I played with the super low, like the world record low voice?
That like didn't sound like singing, but like maybe it counts. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Get him in there.
Whatever. I've always been into the dancier stuff, which. We can say at the beginning would have been called New Jack Swing. I'll give some examples of that for folks that don't know. But Motown Philly, the song that was Matt P's favorite song in the car that he was embarrassed to say, which is Under Pressure. Thank You from the second record is a little New Jack Swingy.
It's really good.
Why don't people like that?
Why?
I mean, people like it, but not like, I don't know. I'm just a sucker. That first album, this is a song called Simpin'. This is on the record with Motown Philly. It's just so good.
What does simpin' mean? What is that? The kids say it now too, simp.
I think the kids said it in 1991. I think it's a different thing. Simp now is S-I-M-P.
Yeah.
This is S-Y-M-P.
Oh.
And they don't mean the same thing.
What do they mean?
This is a gross term you're not going to like, but a guy who's been friend-zoned and who like showers a bunch of like affection on a woman who doesn't like him back. That's the modern simp.
Mm-hmm.
Simp back then is... something very different, I think.
AI knows it.
Tell me.
Simp in Boyz II Men likely refers to the idea of young men maturing, with simping meaning to be overly devoted or submissive in romance. So it's this might be where the phrase simping was coined.
Baby, let me tell you how I feel. The urge is seizing me, controlling it's unreal. Ah, baby, I want to let you know you got me yearning. So baby, let me show you. Ooh, I want you, baby. Gotta know I need to see you here with me.
This ain't the right way.
Gotta find another way to earn your love. Just give me a clue, because you know, simping ain't easy. Get on your hands and knees and lift your eyebrows. Simping ain't easy, and if you want to get it, then you gotta be willing. Crying, begging, pleading on your knees. I guess
so. Kind of gross, but I think that, like, it is. I think it's the same thing.
I just assumed it was different. Well. Anyways, so... Where were we? So Motown Philly hit number 3. So it was a relatively big hit, of course, but all their other mega hits are all the slow ballads. And I think maybe I just loved New Jack Swing. What do you think of New Jack Swing? Do you know that term?
I like never labeled this music as New Jack Swing, but every time you apply that term to bands, I always liked the music. So maybe I like New Jack Swing.
So
what else is under New Jack Swing?
This would be kind of late in the life cycle when it was on all top 40 styles, right? So it would have existed in mostly the late 80s, more in R&B context that were like hits, but not number one on the soft pop or Billboard top 40 kind of charts. So like think sort of hip hop influenced R&B. So Dallas Austin was one of the producers known for this, but producers like Teddy Riley are the ones that sort of pioneered this style. So here's Keith Sweat. Have you heard Keith Sweat? This is I Want Her. That's 87. This is from 88. This is Teddy Riley's group, Guy. Don't clap, just dance. So eventually it does cross over though, right? And this is probably the first intersection I had, 1988. You remember that video, right?
Oh, that cat was amazing.
MC Scat Cat.
Imagine.
Which is some guy whose visage is embodied by a cartoon cat with Paula Abdul, of course.
I wonder why. Like, did he just feel like insecure about being in the video? Or they were like, we're going to make you a cat? And he was like, yes.
What if he's actually a cat?
What if he's actually a cat?
What if it's like a Milli Vanilli sort of thing where they have a cat doing the vocals, but they can't show a real cat on a video. So they have to do an animated cat so people think it's just a shtick.
This video was like revolutionary.
I loved it.
Like,
yeah.
How did they do it?
Right.
How did they do it?
I mean, this is probably right before Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which was magic.
So good.
And so, of course, I would think most people's reference point to sort of the pop side of this would be Belle Biv DeVoe.
Mm-hmm.
1990, Poison. That's all we need to play.
That's all you need. And it's like, they kind of all sound the same, but I like it.
Well,
so
what you're hearing, it's the drum sound, right? And here's Motown Philly, the way it opens. It's a certain
like a
kind
computer.
Of sampled snare that's crazy loud. And that's the vibe. Like when you hear something like Finesse by Bruno Mars from a few years back, it's got that snare sound, and so it sounds like Poison, right? That's New Jack Swing. So one of the members of BBD is Michael Bivins. He's the guy who discovered Boyz II Men, and he's the rapper on Motown Philly.
Oh, that's
right?
Cool.
So he's got like a guest spot. He's sort of, to them, would have been, I guess, an elder statesman because he was in New Edition.
It's like the Puff Daddy of New Jack Swing.
I hope not. I hope not.
I know.
But like, yeah, definitely. Because New Edition, some of their music is, I didn't pull up any clips, but New Edition, which was the boy band Michael Bivins was in, some of their tunes were very New Jack swingy. But apparently, young Mark just loved this style. But folks, check out that Netflix series, This Is Pop. Literally, the first episode is a
That's cool.
is a deep dive. And so check it out. Boys to Men are pretty cool. And the sort of rise of them and then other groups that weren't them getting to stick around on the pop charts longer by right. kind of aping their style.
That's cool.
Because they were successful, but by the time the, you know, NSYNC and all those guys were around, they were crowded out, essentially. Right?
But like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and the other one. With Nick Lachey, whatever.
You
whatever.
Are absolutely asking the wrong guy.
Whatever. But that none of that exists without Boys to Men. Like, Boys to 100%. Men were, like, the folks.
100%.
Yeah.
On our last mailbag, someone said, hey, y'all should talk about appropriation one of these days. Yeah, definitely. Because that's a great example, right, of the white boy bands doing Boys to Men shtick and kind of getting maybe more successful.
Mm.
Anyways, a few episodes ago, I think it might be the Haim episode. You said, Mark, we need to talk about form.
Yeah, I wanted to. And you were like, we can't because of copyright. And I was like, okay. But I was really sad about it.
And that was really recently. And this is one of those episodes where I decided I wanted to do a Motown Philly episode because I wanted to do that song, not because I had a topic.
Mm.
So I went, all right, let's talk about form for this song.
Yes.
Right. So we just did it. There were a few different directions I could have gone in with this tune, but it's a good one to like really deep dive into this. So what we have in this song is what we call a verse chorus form, but also there's some weird stuff in there that we'll come back to. Before I get into this, because this is a whole thing, we are actually daring the copyright police because I'm going to play a fair amount of this song. And that I said in that episode, what makes form so hard is what am I going to do? Divide it up into a bunch of 15-second clips and then how do we piece it together? We're going to try. But we kind of got to listen to all the different sections of the song. I can't just play a couple clips.
I actually think it would be good for the podcast to have like a copyright lawsuit put against us because then we'll like be in the news.
Oh, good for our notoriety. Are you kidding? Yeah.
Anytime someone's saying our name, it's a good thing.
Totally.
So no bad press.
I mean, just get a couple more mortgages to pay off the legal fees and stuff. It's fine.
I bet you we could get free legal representation.
Yeah. And we'll.
Could the Lorehounds help
us? End up with what? 40, 50 bucks a month in ad revenue if by our increased
Imagine.
Listeners. Could you think how worth it that would be? Yeah. So, before I get into it, what do you want to talk about with Boys to Men today?
I want to talk about cultural identity and how, and it actually maps to what you're going to talk about too, so I'm proud of us. But I want to talk about how these boys, as they were becoming men, like had a certain path that was laid out in front of them, and they kind of chose a different path. Like growing up in Philly, there's a certain set of expectations, I'm sure, for a young black man to be a certain way. And maybe that doesn't involve like a sweater vest and a cappella singing. So I want to talk about how they kind of broke the form of their like cultural destiny and tapped into our collective memory about Motown to like appear nostalgic and timeless.
So I think if you think of a contemporary, to say nothing of the couple years later, the boy bands that kind of took the mantle from them, but like Jodeci being contemporary to them, but being all sexy.
Mm.
Like those guys were shirtless and super abbed up and stuff like that. And Boys to Men went with the sweater vest kind of, we're going to be clean cut. And I think it was a commercial play to make it to top 40 radio.
To be like really wholesome
to be
almost
safe,
and safe. Right? And also rely on their vocal chops more than their abs, which I think is
right. Well,
abs
a lot of work. Like you might as well train to be as good a singer as those guys for the amount of time it takes to get those abs, right? Let's talk about that. And then we'll come back to the form.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, what do you got?
So I was thinking about this idea of cultural legacy and intergenerational identity and like collective memory about Motown music. So when you think of, you know, Motown Philly, Motown music, what are some schemas you have about this idea of Motown?
It's interesting, right? Because this is the name Motown Philly, like they're calling location out immediately, right? Because Motown is associated, obviously, with Motown, Motor City, right? Detroit, right? And this is the, what do they say in the first line of the song? The East Coast family, boys to men, ABC, BBD, right? And that's, I don't remember what towns, although I think ABC might be from Atlanta or something like that, but Boys to Men's Philadelphia, they're calling to mind a location, which is different from what Motown generally calls to mind. So when I think Motown, I think girl groups and, you know, Supremes or whatever, young solo artists, you know, Stevie Wonder or like, yeah, I mean, Temptations, that vibe. Yeah. But it's also all wrapped up in also something like Marvin Gaye taking or Stevie Wonder taking control of their music and the struggle of that. When I think Motown, I think a well-oiled machine, right? I think Berry Gordy and his troops of songwriters and the artists are sort of lower on the totem pole than they would normally be in a lot of sort of star-making setups. The artists were grown, you know, they were taught etiquette. The women were taught to essentially appeal to a wide audience through really like proper. So this is the legacy of Motown going back to the 60s that then had kind of gone away and had a little bit of a revival with Boys to Men and some of these other groups with the New Jack Swing.
Because I see a lot of similarities to what you just called out to Boys to Men. The fact that they are, just minimally a group, right? A group of folks that are kind of costumed in a way, like the Supremes or the Temptations. Also kind of sterilized to appeal to a wider audience for marketing. Well marketed, well branded. Really clean cut in their imagery. And that is,
but also really good,
but also very talented. Yes, for sure. And I think when we move ahead in music history and we look at some of the other boy bands, like the ABS one you referenced,
Jodeci,
Jodeci. Sorry.
Well, that's, I think that's going to be about the same time.
Yeah.
Right.
But it still doesn't have that same level of polish, I think, that Boyz II Men has. And maybe that's why Boyz II Men has so much staying power. But cultural psychologists say that music is kind of like a memory container, like a place that we keep all of these schemas attached to, like certain brands of music. And I think that in this song, Boyz II Men is calling back our like collective memories about Motown, even though it's a Motor City reference for sure, to evoke a certain sense of nostalgia to get us to like buy into their whole vibe. And I just think that that's a really interesting tactic, even if it wasn't obtuse, like if they didn't intend it to be that way. It's an interesting thing that's happening. As soon as you hear Motown, I think of like wholesome and I think of accessible and talented music. And I also feel like that's what Boyz II Men is. Another thing I was thinking about with this song is creating their own narrative and creating a whole narrative identity through the song about what they're all about and kind of introducing the audience to who they are as a band that might be different than your interpretations of who a group of four black men together might be at this time. Like in the late 90s, it was like a different, they broke a lot of stereotypes, is I guess what I'm trying to say, in a way that I think is really interesting and really broke the form of what a lot of cultural stereotypes were for people that weren't from Philadelphia or weren't from the East Coast. Like people in other parts of the country may not never have seen a group of black men acting this way, and that might have been good for mindsets overall. Does that make sense? I'm trying like...
I think so. Like, I feel like you're tiptoeing around things too, a little bit. Like, I think you're right though. They're trying to go against... I mean, this is early 1990s. Right. We're still in Bush 1 era.
Yeah.
Like, we're still sort of in the Reagan era, which had a lot of consequences to the way people viewed cities and urban youth in general, I would say, and specifically black men.
I mean,
black
Rodney
men,
King
right?
was 1991.
Yeah, same era, right? So that stuff's all there, and this is trying to cut against that in the way that Motown had made their sort of, because Motown, original generation Motown, was during the civil rights era. Same thing. Let's try to sort of sidestep and almost ignore all that kind of stuff. And it's funny because if you think of the East Coast family, the three groups, the one that's more rappy is ABC. And they're literally little
kids.
Right? Whereas Belle Biv DeVoe has a little more, we're grown. I mean, there's like more sexuality in there, but they're singers, right? I mean, there was some rapping, but it's a little different. Like it's all very well calculated to go against the sort of stereotypes. And I'm just trying to think, this is like a biography song on some level, yeah. right? Let me pull up some lyrics.
Like going against certain cultural stereotypes, and I'll be more on the nose with it, and how Motown did kind of whitewash Black artists to make them more accessible to a white audience. So it felt sanitized for us in a way that countered the civil rights movement. I will posit that Boyz II Men was doing the same thing in the face of Rodney King, in the face of like Tupac. I mean, Tupac was murdered in 96 and Boyz II Men was still doing their thing in 96, right?
Sure.
Right?
That's probably around the Mariah Carey collab, right?
So imagine that all on the radio at the same time and all in the news cycle at the same time, that you're seeing these quote gangster rappers against Boyz II Men and their sweater vests and their love ballads and their collaborations with Mariah Carey. And this idea came up in the Mariah Carey episode when we talked to Brie as well, this idea of like cross-culture collaborations and how that mattered so much at the time. And we're seeing that here too with Boyz II Men being like really groundbreaking in terms of how they are trying to reach across culture.
I mean, this is simultaneous to The Chronic, essentially, yeah. right? And NWA had been a few years before that, where you said Tupac is he's rising, he's going to die mm-hmm. in a few years. But that those two samplings of Black American culture are happening at the same time.
Right.
And so, and Motown's angle has always been more this. They weren't going to be Death Row Records, right? They weren't going to do that. They weren't going to be an incubator for Eazy-E or whatever, or Ice Cube, right? It could only be this. But it's interesting in a period, and I can claim a degree of naivety about what was going on exactly with Motown in the 1980s, mm-hmm. but my understanding is they had suffered a decline a bit.
Yeah.
Their mega artists had grown up and taken control of their own music, and in most cases had left the record label. I think Stevie Wonder stayed with them technically for a while, but he was no longer allowing the machine to do what they were doing. When he was a young man, by the time we got to Inner Visions and Songs in the Key of Life, they were not putting Stevie Wonder through their choreography lessons and mm-hmm. how to speak in public. No, he was his own artist and he was saying, you're just going to, you know, cash in on, you're going to distribute this record. He was calling the shots. So they had lost their sort of specific way of assembly lining mainstream friendly music and had declined as a cultural force. But then with gangster rap and these other things coming up in this era, they rose again, if only briefly, which right. is really, and I'm not sure if at this point the family, the Gordy family, had sort of ceded control, because at one point Motown got sold to a corporate entity. It was okay. no longer a family. I mean, there was a point when it was the largest Black-owned family business in the country.
Wow.
Which eventually they sold off to one of the major record labels and they became essentially a subsidiary. I don't remember when around that happens, but I think it's around this era. But it's a counterpoint almost against the rise of Death Row and things like yeah. that.
And it's also cool with Boyz II Men, you know, when we put it in this cultural context and talking about like intergenerational cultural identity.
Right, because you mentioned that.
When they're coming up, you know, you notice that Motown, like, you know, the Supremes and the Temptations, they're not really around anymore.
Sure.
But the kids that are listening to Boyz II Men, their parents probably listen to the Supremes and the Temptations.
Totally.
So yeah. they hear this on the radio and they're like, oh, this is music I can get behind my kids.
Like they know
to.
The original version of It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday. Or they do when right. Boyz II Men does In the Still of the Night or whatever. Oh, I know this song from when I was a
and
kid.
And it calls totally. Back yeah. to them a time that the civil rights movement was moving and they were looking for like kind of peace in that moment. And now we're flash forwarding to Rodney King, to Tupac, to all of this other cultural stuff happening in their kids' lives and finding a nostalgic connection to this music through that lens. And that's why Boyz II Men, I think, stuck around for so long, is because it appealed to such a wide audience on so many different
sure.
and subconscious levels that you might not have made the connection to, but you just hear Boyz II Men and you feel comforted by them. Just yeah. like when you hear Motown music, you feel comforted by it. And that's going back to its response to the cultural movements of their time.
Yeah. But that's also what made it uncool for Matt P in yeah. the car to admit that he was a fan.
Because it wasn't edgy.
It wasn't edgy at all.
By design.
And I mean, folks, like, how much of the music do I bring in here that has like dope vocal harmonies and stuff? It was formative
yeah.
in its awesomeness to me as a kid, but wasn't edgy, right? So even by the time we get to One Sweet Day, which is like middle school, maybe for us, eighth grade, ninth grade or something like that. Even if they had kept up with the like bouncy fun tunes like Motown Philly or Thank You that I said I loved, I probably still would have fallen off because I was looking for punk and post grunge and I was looking for more or even the hip hop of that era that was more edgy. I would have been a fan of, like, me as a high schooler couldn't accept the sort of wholesome stuff anymore, which is, I mean, I even fell off of Weird Al until I was an adult, you know?
Oh my gosh.
And it's like everything that wasn't, I needed to like be a part of a counterculture sort of, right? And Boys to Men weren't that, right? So that they could do a single with Mariah Carey that was probably the biggest song of that year.
So good.
But it wasn't big in the youth culture in the same way that like a big Tupac song was. For me, like California Love, probably around that same era. And that
also
was
so great.
Just everywhere for young people, right?
Yeah.
So
I love it. I love it. I think it's like cool to have all these connections between like music and cultural moments for sure. So that's really all I got to share about Boyz II Men and what I'm thinking.
Well, I mean, we talked about them like four times.
I know.
Did you go to, sorry to sidetrack before we even get into what I wanted to talk about. Did you go to record stores a lot when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. We went to like Tower Records on Newbury Street in Boston.
So I never went to Tower. Tower was more like in the malls where I grew up. So there were more like local ones I would go to. After this album came out, I would like for the next year or two, periodically go to the warehouse in San Diego. That's what it was called.
Nice.
There was a local chain, I guess. And just ask the people, is there a new Boyz II Men album out? My little pea-sized brain couldn't handle when End of the Road came out, which was a single, which was on the soundtrack to Boomerang, which is a movie that we
never
were too young
it.
To see.
Yeah, never
Eddie
saw
Murphy
that.
Movie. I was like, oh, there's a new Boyz II Men album out.
Yeah.
Which there was not. And I would go. I probably would go once a month to this record store to look to see what the Weird Al albums out were or whatever. And I would ask them and they would like, no, it's still coming. And like my little brain couldn't go, what's the deal with this song, to even be told, oh, bro, that's just a single. It's just on a soundtrack. The soundtrack's right there. It's
going to
have
it.
12 songs you don't know, and it'll have
like
End of the Road.
One song.
Or it was such a weird thing. And then apparently later that song got added to like deluxe editions of this album.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until I had already kind of moved on that the second album came out and I had a CD player and I just bought it when it came out, right? It's such a weird little chapter of my life of being a record store junkie like I would then be for sure in high school,
right.
But not understanding how
like
any
how
of it
works.
Not understanding that I should check the soundtracks, that I should check the singles, get a single, and that album cycles were a thing that was like, no, dude, you got to wait like 2 or 3 years
Imagine.
For the next record.
At Tower Records, you used to go and they'd have like listening stations that you could go and listen to albums before you bought them.
Oh, wow.
Which was cool.
It feels later, though. That was even back then.
Oh, I don't know. I was in college. So maybe like 2000s after.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is like, I'm talking early 90s, right?
Which you're is like a different. 10 years old at the record store.
Like you also
like, where's
could,
Boyz II Men?
You could, in the era you're talking about, you could also look up online probably.
Maybe, but
when
I didn't,
something was
I didn't
out.
Know how to do stuff like that. I mean, I'm not tech savvy.
You didn't
savvy.
Log onto your AOL account that you borrowed from Angelo in your on your cross country team?
No, I didn't. We used to get the free AOL CDs and sit in my friend Jessica's basement and chat with boys online and pretend we were 20-year-old girls when we were middle school.
Yeah, I'm sure that didn't mean anything bad. Yikes. Okay.
It was formative.
Should we talk about form?
Yes, form. Formative, yes.
So eventually we are hurtling towards, but we're not there yet. This song is essentially a very good example of what we call verse-chorus form, which sometimes is called verse-refrain, but I'm going to not call it verse-refrain because there's another thing that's sometimes called refrain form that is a related, but let's not get into it.
And like refrain, of course, that sounds like nerds. We're not nerds, you know?
We are not nerds.
No.
That's true. True fact, right? We are very cool.
So cool.
Verse-chorus, you probably intuitively or even more than intuitively know what I mean when I say that, right?
Yeah.
We got a verse.
Yep.
And it happens. And then you got a chorus.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the deal with the chorus?
It like has a hook and it repeats. And then you get another verse and another chorus. And then the song's over.
Yeah. So, and maybe there's little other things that happen.
There's little twinkles, like a bridge in between somehow.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that form. But we're going to talk about the ways in which the song breaks that form. And actually maybe has more in common with the Joseph Haydn string quartet.
Okay.
So coming back to that. So this form incidentally goes way back. Any guesses like what genre would have been an early popularizer of this? And I mean like early 20th century or even 1800s.
The Joseph Haydn string quartet?
That's earlier than that. That's going to be 18th century.
Oh,
but
gosh.
That's not verse chorus. I mean, pop music. Like, where does this come from?
Elvis?
Way earlier than that. Let's come back to Elvis.
Okay.
We'll come back to rock and roll. So if you think back to the late 1800s, like minstrelsy, Think like Oh Susanna, songs like that.
Okay, sure.
That's verse chorus form. And it becomes really prominent actually with country music in the early 20th century. So if you think this is the legendary Carter family, very influential, like a family band, like I think husband and wife and then a sister of one of them. And Maybelle Carter, very formative as a guitarist. This style of country guitar is super influential. Their version of Keep on the Sunny Side, the song's from 1899, written by Ada Blenkhorn and J. Howard Entwistle. But this is from 1928. Here's a verse.
In the dark and the troubled side of life, there's a bright and a sunny side too. So we meet with the darkness and strife, this sunny side we also may view.
Sounds like Emmett Otter and his jug band.
I don't know.
Emmett Otter's jug band.
Oh, Emmett Otter. That comes up. It came up on the Lorehound show. It came up on our show last season. Still don't know what it is.
It's very good.
But the Maybelle's got, it's called Thunbrush, I think is the original name.
Okay.
Boom, cha-cha, boom, cha-cha, boom.
Yeah.
She's playing bass and chords on the guitar. That is a verse, right? So the verse, often less catchy, more conversational.
Okay.
Often the words will change throughout the song.
Yeah.
The verse often, especially in a country song, will tell a story.
I was just going to say the verse is where you get the content, where you tell the story.
You
and
the
chorus
facts.
Is where you're like reminded of the vibe.
Yeah, you get the universal ideas in the chorus.
Mm-hmm.
So let's listen to the chorus of Keep on the Sunny Side.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all our way. If we keep on the sunny side of life.
Those lyrics are creepy and toxic.
Toxic positivity.
Toxic positivity.
Everybody tune into our seal episode. Yeah. So, but universal ideas, the chorus in this song will always come back the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true with all pop music, but it's very often true. Usually catchier, simpler melodically, easier to sing along with. These are common things in a chorus. More backing vocals also, right?
Okay.
Called the chorus for
right.
a reason.
Huh.
So essentially, verse chorus form involves the alternation of a verse and a chorus. And for a song like this, that's all it would be. Except, you know, there could be a solo passage or something. But this form is not dominant in American popular music in the first half of the 20th century. Way more often, we have on the R&B side of things in blues, we have something called the 12-bar blues, which is a certain stock chord progression that is also a form, and something called AABA, which we could probably talk about later, which was really common in musicals and thus in like mainstream pop for decades and decades. AABA, which means you do something, you do it again, you do something different,
mm-hmm.
and then you do that first thing.
It's just like poetry or storytelling.
There's certainly an analogous poetic form. Yeah. And so it's really rock and roll that starts using, because rock and roll, and for ways we can talk about later, especially when we talk about appropriation, is like a fusion of a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Rhythm and blues, country music, blues, Tin Pan Alley pop. And so what we get is in a lot of cases, sort of blues music, R&B music with this verse chorus form sometimes pasted on. And then by the time we get to the Beatles, it's like, by the end of the Beatles, it has replaced it. If you listen to early Beatles, you've got AABA for a lot of that music, like This Boy, songs like that. But by the time we get to Lucy and the Sky with Diamonds, that's chorus, right? So here's a rock and roll tune, not Elvis, Big Joe Turner, 1954, the verse of Shake, Rattle, and Roll.
Get out of that bed, wash your face and hands. kitchen, make some noise with the pots and pans.
So if another verse happened, what would you expect?
The lyrics would change.
Lyrics would change, yeah.
And the chorus always stays the same.
And the chorus in this song, you get it a few times, it's always the same.
I said shake, round and roll. Shake, round and roll. Shake, round and roll. Shake, round and roll. Well, you won't do right to save your doggone soul.
Yeah, and it's easy to learn those lyrics, yeah?
Yeah, for sure, because right. It's very repetitive and they're quick. I was even just thinking of just songwriting in general and how it feels like most of the effort is spent on the verses and the chorus is just like, okay, here is the chorus again.
But a good chorus is hard to write
but
and
once
really
you
important.
Have it, yeah, it's really important. But once you have it, it's like locked in.
You don't have to change as much, maybe.
Right? Yeah.
So let's see how this song, Motown Philly, fits in with this tradition, right? That's the game today. So I'm going to be using a common labeling system as we talk through this.
Okay.
And I already used it a little bit with when I said AABA, right?
Okay.
So a common way that you document form is by giving a different letter to a different section.
Got it.
So when we have something called a fixed form, like a form that has a standard map, we can get other terms like verse, chorus, intro, or for classical fans, sonata, exposition, development, recapitulation. But when things don't fall neatly into those categories, the words don't always help.
Yeah.
Like you get kind of goofy. It's the pre-post bridge, like stuff like that, right?
Right. So Taylor Swift always says things like that, like the post bridge, pre-chorus. It's like, what are you doing?
It starts to become harder for someone to know what you're talking about if you're kind of having to make up terms on this fly. So we can always fall back on letters, right?
Yeah.
And so when we talk about form, I mentioned this in our little mini episode last season, sort of explaining music terms. When we're doing form, we're essentially talking about the interaction of three things. Repeating, repetition, contrast, which is when something's different, or variation, which is when something is kind of different,
okay,
right? And that's basically a form is the progression of musical events along those three variables, right? So for example, if our first section is A, and that's usually what you should do, the first section generally
sense.
Is
it
A.
Makes sense.
Now there's some exceptions where you would want to like not do that, but I don't want to get into that.
Yeah.
First section generally A. If the second thing that happens in the song is the first section happening again, that's a repetition.
Okay.
We would just call it A again. So the song would go A, right?
Got it.
Now,
A.
What if the next thing that happens is a section of music that's super different? That's a contrast.
Mm-hmm.
What would I do?
B,
right?
Got it.
And then let's say B happens again. I'll put another B. And let's say the next thing that happens is something new. I'll put C.
Okay.
What if the next thing that happens is B, but like transformed some way, like different lyrics, extra vocal harmonies, new instruments? That's a variation, right?
Okay.
So what letter would I use?
I mean,
A, B, C, D, E, F, what am I doing?
I mean,
it's like B, ooh, but an evolution. This is a variation.
Maybe like B, not B, 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 because that would just be the repeating of B.
Uh-huh.
Would it be like B, if it's B and A smushed together, would you say B, A?
So if you write B, A, it seems like it's B and then A. So what we use is B prime.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say like B with a 3 above it.
B with a little
like a superscript
apostrophe, essentially.
Okay.
Right. Or a number one.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what
so
I would
B variation one. So if my song goes A, B, C, B prime, and then later B double prime,
oh,
is that
gosh.
Follow up?
I'm already lost. I'm not lost, but I'm just like thinking forward to like applying this.
The
to
song's
this
gonna
song.
Be crazy.
It's a
right?
long, I'm looking at the lyrics now because I'm so visual. But yep. I know you're going to start like quizzing me on like what letter is which verse and I need to see
it. Not going to quiz you, but I'm going to read them out loud because it gets crazy.
It's a long song and there's a lot of iteration. That's not the right word, but a lot of like changes.
And spoiler, that's what's going to bring us
to our knees
to this.
Oh, gosh.
Right? Because it starts to get crazy.
It starts to get crazy.
let's go through this song, okay. But we'll think of it from the perspective first of a pop song coming out in 1991, which means essentially we're starting from the frame of verse chorus, right? Okay. So we start with an intro. Intros are not always there, but they're often there. And when they happen, they usually are related to the music in the song later. It's not always true, but usually the intro in a pop song is based on the chorus or based on the verse or something. Right. And then it goes into the chorus, but that intro is the drums, some bass, some synths. It's sampling that boys to men, ABC, BBD line in the first verse. We're going to call this A because it's the first thing that happened.
Okay.
Right.
I think that that's risky.
Should we call it Z?
No. It makes sense. We're going to need A later, though, but it goes
go in order.
Okay.
Because otherwise, now we're simultaneously doing two things. We're simultaneously giving it an A letter, but we're also calling it an intro.
Right.
Because we're assuming this is a verse chorus, right?
Okay.
And so we'll use the terms when they help.
Okay.
Now, it's only a problem if later in the song we learn that the terms are no longer help.
Well, because that's never going to happen again.
Well, so this is interesting. I didn't want to get into it, but there are cases where you won't want to use, if the intro is a weird thing that never happens again. Sometimes you could like just put it as I or something.
Right. That's why I'm like, shouldn't we just like,
because then you've got like I, A, B, A, B, A. That's the song.
Because that's what I'm saying. We're going to need the A later for the next.
But if the intro is something that comes back.
Does it?
Well, okay. We'll see. Right.
Oh, I'm stressed. Clark.
Usually, look, there are reasons why labeling a little intro as A is problematic. But the fact of the matter is, keeping things chronologically going through the alphabet keeps things simple.
It's better.
Too.
It's going to pay off for us.
Because you can see a letter and know that it came before. And I comes later than A in the alphabet. So that could be confusing. Okay. So don't bore us. Let's get to the chorus. We get the chorus of the song, which we will label as B.
So they're just coming strong with the chorus.
That's right. And not to beat a dead horse, what makes that feel like the chorus? Even if you haven't heard the song, you don't know that it's repeating.
Because it's like giving us the vibe.
Gives you the vibe. Simple.
It's not narrative. It's just a vibe check.
And catchy melody.
Yeah.
The backup vocals. Now, backup vocals are going to be all over this whole group. Well. But it feels chorusy. It's catchy. It's simple. Not too hard. Not too soft. Here's a contrasting chorus from another song, which I've already referenced a million times, 1995, One Sweet Day. Does this feel chorusy? I miss Mike, man. That low, you can hear it in a Mariah Carey song
really
to hear the low
song.
Bass voice.
You're crying listening
so cool.
to that song. I don't care who you are. If you have a human feeling, you're getting nostalgic. I think that's for sure chorus. It like sets the vibe and tells you what to feel when you're listening to the song.
Yeah.
And that's what I think of as
easy
chorus.
Lyrics.
Easy lyrics.
Catchy melody.
So great. Easy to sing too.
Epic too, right?
Yeah.
What happens next in the song?
Okay. It's long overdue.
First verse. So far we are A, B.
Okay.
That's what we got. We get verse one.
It's long overdue, but now fiddle is slamming. Boys to men, ABC, BBD. The East Coast family never skipped a beat.
And it goes on a little bit, but that is Nathan Morris telling us a story. More conversational, less catchy, less repetitive. Yeah?
Yeah.
Feels like a verse.
So we don't call it verse one. We would call that C.
Well, it's both, right?
Okay. Okay, cool.
We label it as a C.
Right.
So this letter system transcends style, transcends form. What you can always use it, but a fixed form, a common form like verse chorus also has words we can use. So
okay.
It is both verse one and letter C.
Just like Motown Philly's Back Again is both
chorus and B. Because it's the second thing that happens.
And
right?
We're using that alpha convention just to like make sense of this despite form.
Well, because if we have something that comes back that's like based on the chorus.
Yep.
If something comes back that's a transformation of the chorus, the alphabetical system lets us call it prime.
Yeah.
So we can see, oh, like a common thing would be like a guitar solo in a song happening over the chord progression that is the verse or the chorus.
Okay.
And then you would call that a prime or something. And so you see the form and you go, oh, I understand the interaction of these. That maybe is lost if you just called it a bridge.
Well,
right?
I understand what you're trying to teach me.
Love it. Hey, those of you at home listening on 2x speed, are you following me or are you getting lost? Okay.
I'm also looking at the lyrics while you're talking.
That's right. That's
which
helpful.
I'm finding
Everybody pull
really
over,
helpful.
Look at the lyrics. So,
sorry.
So notably, though, this does have the boys to men ABC BBD line, which was used in fragmentary sampled form in the A. So you could go, well, this is an A. No,
I'm
this
not doing
feels
that.
Like a different section.
Give me
We're
a break.
Calling it a C.
Right.
Yeah.
Give, me
give,
a break.
Give you a break. What do we have next? We have probably my favorite part
so
of the
good.
Form. The pre-chorus. I love a good pre-chorus.
Mm-hmm. Back in school, we used to dream about this every day. Could it really happen? Or do dreams just fade away? Yeah. Then we started singing and they said it sounds smooth. Then we started a group and here we are, kicking it just for you.
I love this pre-chorus because it gives them all a chance to like shine,
yeah.
And you're really introduced to them as a band, and that's what the lyrics are insinuating as well. But we would call this, where are we? We would call this pre-chorus D.
Yeah, pre-chorus one is D, and we get a lot of Wanya Morris, no relation to Nathan Morris. Boys to Men loves them a good Wanya Morris, super emotional pre-chorus. Here's End of the Road.
He's the one that was like, he's a little bit broken and I can probably fix him. So
he kind of sounds like he's about to cry,
I
right?
Know.
He has the extremely emotional voice. And
always.
a pre-chorus often serves the purpose of building tension. So you want the chorus. And so in End of the Road, there's some fun chords, but really it's building energy because of how plaintive his vocal is. In Motown Philly, there's the trading off of different singers, the backing vocals, but also the chords are moving faster and a little more interesting than in the verse, building tension for the chorus.
Back in school, we used to dream about this every day. Could it really happen? Or do dreams just fade away? Yeah. Then we started singing and they said it sounds smooth. Then we started a group and here we are, kicking it just for you.
Different ways of doing it, but the pre-chorus is pointing towards this.
Which is B, chorus two.
Yeah. So what do we have so far? Chorus two, which is basically exactly the same as chorus
right.
A. We have A, intro, B, chorus one, C, verse one, D, pre-chorus one, B, chorus two. And it's not different enough. Yes, it's chorus two, but we're not going to call it B prime. It's just B. Repeat. This is a repetition, not a variation.
Right.
So A, B, C, D, B. That's our form so far. Yeah. But also, we're fitting squarely into verse chorus at this point anyways. So you could just say intro, chorus, verse one, pre-chorus, chorus, right? So what would we expect next would be another verse, right? That's the logical thing to do next in the verse chorus form. But what we get is this.
Yo, these four new jacks is real smooth on a harmony tip. Nick, Mike, Sean, and Juan, you know the mentality. Keep flipping the gift.
And the spotlight is on us.
We get a Michael Bivins little sort of rap.
Right.
So is that the bridge?
I don't know.
We're a little too early in the song for a bridge.
Can it be? Could it be A prime?
Ooh, does it sound like the intro?
Yo, these four new jacks is real smooth on a harmony tip.
Okay, let's listen to the intro. It's got the same beat, but most of it's different. I don't know that it's really...
I'm just trying to like fit it into the motif. without giving it a new label, because it's not new. We've heard this vibe before.
Have we had a rapper?
Not a rapper, but this is like such a standalone moment in the song. Like, you don't hear it anywhere else. And it does.
So it probably needs its own letter then.
Oh, so what
right?
do we get?
So this is kind of like a bridge, but it doesn't function. A bridge usually is a late song point of maximal contrast to bring us away to make our return to the chorus be really satisfying. So what the heck is this? First of all, from a letter perspective, you know, it's kind of based on A, but let's just call it E because it is different, right? We got A, B, C, D, B, E, right?
Okay.
But what if we try to hold on to our verse chorus model, what do we call this? Is this something called a post chorus?
Oh.
Which is a common variation in there. This is a common thing that happens where you have a little, sometimes called a tag, that happens after the chorus before the next verse. This is On Bended Knee from their second record. This is a great example of a post chorus.
Oh God, give me the reason. I'm down on bended knee. I'll never walk again. So
then we get a verse. That whole thing is the post-chorus, but that happens a few times. This just happens once, and so it's a little random to be a post-chorus.
Mm.
Could it be a pre-verse? That's another thing that you sometimes happen, which think of it as a similar thing, except the post-chorus is a tag at the end of the chorus. A pre-verse is like a lead-up to the verse.
I like calling it a pre-verse because this reminds me of the intro. So to call it, it's like a second intro to me, but like a little bit more developed. So I think I would tag it to what's coming next.
That's
not what just already happened.
So this is the pre-verse, as I'm labeling it, in Thank You.
And I thank you.
Yeah, it like sets the tone for what's coming next.
Yes.
It's like moving us forward.
So I think this rap section, we could just label it rap, but maybe we could call it a pre-verse. I will say it only happens once though, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is not like a steady, predictable thing for other verses. It happens only before verse two. So we're at A, B, C, D, chorus, B, pre-verse, E, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then we get another verse, and verse in our previous form is going to be C, right?
Yeah.
Intro, chorus, and then verse one. So here's what verse two sounds like. Probably this is just going to be a C, maybe a C prime.
Our light is on us now. Watch us do this. Live and direct from Philly town.
We're rapping, hyping, we can get down.
I'm going to call this C prime.
Right. You could sometimes just say, okay, well, verses always have different lyrics. It's taken for granted. We'll just call it C.
No.
But this is quite different. Mm-hmm. It has the same piano riff. It starts with the same melody. So it's definitely still a verse. But this time it's Sean Stockman singing lead. It's got the da-da-da-da. It's structured a bit differently. I think we're in good standing to call this C prime.
And I like this because the other C verse also references their affinity to Philadelphia and how they're developing as a band, like conceptually. It's autobiographical conceptually.
Yeah.
So I like having the C label on it because it makes connection between those two verses.
Totally. So why C prime? Because it's a variation of C, not just a repetition. What do we get next? Another pre-chorus, which is pretty much the same with a little bit of tweak. So we'll just call that D again. And then a third chorus, which is again, pretty much the same. So we'll just call it B. So to review, the intro's A, the chorus is B, the verses are C, the pre-chorus is D, and the pre-verse is E. So we get A, B, C, D, B, E, C prime, D, B. And this is where you start to go, okay, this is getting a little unwieldy, right? So maybe our terms with verse chorus are better for this song. We'll see.
Yeah.
So far. Because it almost broke with the pre-verse thing, but I think the pre-verse
label
works fine.
Yeah, I like calling it just rap.
Rap
one. Pre-verse rap.
pre-verse rap.
We never
I like
see it
that.
Again. Even
like
to give that. It a letter, it's like, all right, E, yeah. You kind of throw an E away on that one, you know?
We're wasting a perfectly good vowel on it.
Right.
E. Yeah.
We never see it again.
Hey, everybody, Mark here in the edit. If you're getting overwhelmed by the A, B, C, D, B, C prime stuff, whatever, check the show notes. It's a spoiler for the final form of this song, but I have all three different analytical types to the song. Yes, three. There's the verse chorus, there's the letters, and then a third one I bring up at the end. Pause, take a look at the description on your podcast app. I know this is not a visual medium. All right, well, weird stuff starts happening. So we're going to hear the very tail end of the third chorus, and then we get this.
Oof.
What the hell is that?
It is a iteration of the intro.
It sure is. Here's the intro. It's got a little more to it, but it is based on the intro.
Dude, it's A prime all day.
A prime all day.
Mm-hmm.
But what the heck do we call this? We can't call it an intro. Now, Chris DeMakes, do you know, have I said?
No, I don't.
Chris DeMakes is the lead vocalist and guitarist of Less Than Jake, but he has a songwriting podcast.
Here we go. Okay, gosh.
Everybody,
that's cool. I'll check it out.
Chris DeMakes, the podcast is great because he'll bring in a songwriter, you know, anything from like punk and ska folks, but also like John Oates or Huey Lewis. They'll be in there talking about like famous songs, and they get really, you think I'm getting nitty gritty. They go through every single bar of the song.
I've recently learned that I'm really into
songwriting. You're great at this and you love songwriting. But he'll use the term re-intro for an intro that comes back. That is very much a made up thing,
like,
though.
Very, like, astronaut-y.
Re-entry into orbit, yeah. So,
kind of.
I don't know that it makes sense, but it's the intro coming back. This isn't quite a breakdown, because it's too intense to be a breakdown. What we know it is A prime.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a bridge, really. It's sort of just the intro coming back, right? So, this is a thing that Boyz II Men will do, where they'll bring the intro back. This is one of their New Jack Swing bangers from that first record called Simpin', which we've already deconstructed the title of.
To get to the bottom
this
of
is
that.
What I would call the bridge of that song, but really it's just bringing back the intro. It's kind of like a copy paste of the beginning of the song with the New Jack Swing drum part, right? But it's not like we just do the intro and go right back to the chorus. So this doesn't get to be called a bridge. Because what happens after this second intro? We get this.
Now check this out. One day back in Philly, four guys wanted to sing. They came up to me, I said, well, what's your name?
Boyz II Men.
Hey, you know what I'm saying?
It's Michael Bivins again with another rap. And it's musically similar to the first rap. So this is rap two. We can't call that pre-verse, though, because this doesn't come before a verse.
Would we call this E prime?
This would be E prime. Awesome.
Rap two.
So I think we just got to call it rap two. It's not really a bridge either, because
it's just there.
It comes from this second intro and it goes to something that's not the chorus or the verse. It's just sort of there.
So it's not post-chorus or pre-verse.
No, because
it's rap two.
It's in the middle of essentially three sections that together we could kind of call the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
But you see that our verse-chorus terms have kind of failed us here.
Right.
Because where the bridge would normally go, the bridge being a point of contrast that brings us back to the chorus, we have three interconnected sections, because right after Biv does his rap, we get this.
Ugh. See if this one moves you.
Maybe that's the bridge, but I would call this like the scat section, kind of.
Yeah, it kind of is giving intro vibes too, but not enough to do
it's
like
super different.
Now, what happens after prime? Like, if it's a third time, do you call it something different?
Double prime.
Double prime. Okay. So this wouldn't be
A prime.
Oh, gosh.
Right.
This wouldn't be a double prime because it's not close enough to the intro, even though, like, melodically it is.
The intro doesn't have any melody at all.
I know.
This is, look,
I guess
we have to take for granted that like the beat, the overall swung 16ths backbeat, hip-hoppy New Jack Swing beat goes throughout the entire song. So just because this section has that beat doesn't mean everything, if we took the beat as an indicator, the whole song would be basically A.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So the fact that it has the same beat as the intro kind of doesn't matter.
So
musically, this doom, 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 da, da, this like bell core they're doing like an a cappella group would, this is its own thing. This gets to be F.
And F. Scat F, section.
Scat section, right? And this is not the only time Boyz II Men does this. This is a tune, Jezebel, from their second record.
All right. Got it going on.
Ew.
Wanna get to know you, don't know your nationality. Can we converse and see when's a good time to get together, baby? Am I being a little fast? No, I don't know. Maybe so, I don't think so. In fact, I don't care. All I wanna do is...
Now, that one has more like real lyrics in it. But essentially, they're going off a lot like what would be called a shout chorus in a jazz tune, where like you've done a bunch of the solos, and then at the near the end of the song, all the horns like ba da ba 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 da ba do ba do ba do, they all play together with tight harmony.
It's like show offy,
or you know, 1992, "My Love and You're Never Gonna Get It" by En Vogue. Ugh. They have essentially a vocal version of a shout chorus at the end of that song.
Never gonna get it, 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 never gonna get it.
Whoa, whoa, whoa,
whoa. Never gonna get it, never gonna.
That's a great song.
Sure is. Yeah.
Right?
Maybe one day we can talk about it.
Maybe one day.
Maybe we can dream. So what the heck is going on with our...
Oh, gosh.
If you want to use the verse chorus frame still in this song, you kind of have no choice but to smash the second intro, the rap, and the scat section into one section and call it a bridge, right? But
okay.
But that doesn't represent accurately what's happening because it's really three separate sections.
Yeah.
So take a deep breath. If the scat section is F, the song goes A, B, C, D, B, E, C prime, D, B, A prime, E prime, F. Which gives you, as a musician, a pretty accurate understanding of the flow of things, but is also really discombobulating, right? Our terms, if we try to use verse chorus, we get intro, chorus, verse one, pre-chorus one, chorus, pre-verse or rap one, verse two, pre-chorus two, chorus three, intro two plus rap two plus scat, which... Together, basically, we call
a bridge. Yeah.
Right? So, kind of messy. Mostly fits verse chorus form, but the three-part bridge is kind of weird. Because, and what happens, by the way, at the end, I should say, we get another chorus, so a B, we end there on a B, and then another reinterpretation of the intro, which we could call an outro.
Oh!
So that's a double prime.
That's what I have on my notes.
You got it. You're already making the notes. So
I need to do, the only way this would work for me is to do it on paper.
Sure. Sorry, listeners.
Sorry,
this is a audio medium. This is an audio medium. This is why I didn't want to do form.
Well, it's really interesting and I like the mapping of it quite a bit. Like I'm really intrigued by this process. I'm really into it. And it for me, because I'm so visual, I need to be able to see it just to track. But not everyone needs to do that. Like, you probably don't need to write it all down.
100% I need to write it all down.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
It makes me feel better.
When I'm doing an analysis, like, high level, like, actually an analytical project or whatever, back when I was doing papers, I'm writing all over a score in a lot of cases. I'm actually marking things in the score, what key we're in. I'm labeling uppercase letters for the section, lowercase letters for the phrase group.
Yeah.
So like section B, phrase A would be B and then a little a and stuff like
that. Not to talk about AI, but you could really just load up some sheet music into AI and just say like label this for...
AI is not going to know when the formal demarcations happen.
Ugh.
That's the thing is you don't... It takes human intuition. Look.
One day
the AI will be able to do it. But... You're listening to the end of a phrase and you're going, oh, that phrase is actually also the beginning of a new phrase sonically, which means that's a phrase elision. So I need to have my bar numbers overlapping. Like you can't just like look at the score and go, oh, that's the end of B. You have to listen to the music.
It's like you're doing surgery on the music, like a doctor of music.
More diagnostic than that. You're doing a scan.
Okay, well, that's fine.
So, okay. So,
trying to give you some clout here, Mark.
So, 40 minutes ago, I played a little fragment of a Haydn string quartet.
Gosh, I can't wait to hear
more. Why? Because we've used two perfectly reasonable analytical methods of form, and both of them are getting unwieldy. So, once again, one last time. Verse chorus form, this song goes intro, chorus one, verse one, pre-chorus one, chorus two, rap one, verse two, pre-chorus two, chorus three, re-intro, rap two, scat, chorus four, outro. It makes sense, but it's kind of overwhelming in detail.
Right.
The letter schema, which shows us the interrelationships, is also kind of a lot. We have A, B, C, D, B, E, C prime, D, B, A prime, E prime, F, B, A double prime. And if the listeners, if you've lost me, that's the point. It's a lot. So maybe there's something else that we could take.
What?
Hot take. Maybe we should listen one more time to the Doric String Quartet playing Joseph Haydn's String Quartet in E-flat major, Opus 33, number 2, H-O-B, Roman numeral 3:38. That's a numbering system to keep track of Haydn's work.
Right.
Movement number 4, also known as The Joke.
Oh,
very famous.
Yeah.
1781. Here is the way it opens. So that is the beginning of this string quartet, and we would call that section the refrain.
Okay.
It's a term that sometimes is used for the chorus also in a pop song, but refrain is something in this form that is very meaningful to mean, in this case, exactly what we just heard. What happens next? What happens next is this. This is the end of the refrain. Something different. So what letter?
B.
Oh. And then A.
We're back. Yeah.
So we have A, the refrain, and then we have B, something else, and then the refrain comes back. So we have A, B, A.
What do you call the something else?
Well, what we call it is an episode.
Oh.
What happens later in the piece? Something like this. Back to a refrain. So that is another episode. And so what this piece of music is, this is called a rondo, R-O-N-D-O, coming from the word round, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we have a refrain, which is sort of like a pop song chorus that keeps coming back. Usually the same, not always, but usually the same with other stuff in the middle. Sometimes that stuff repeats. In this rondo, I think one of the episodes comes back a second time, but sometimes the episodes might be different. Usually the deeper into the song you get, the episodes will be more robust and long and more kind of show-offy. But we keep coming back to the chorus. So it's, for example, a rondo would be like refrain, which is the, like the chorus, refrain, episode one, refrain, episode two, refrain, episode one again, refrain, episode three, which is like the big one with the key change, and then end on the refrain.
Mark. That's what Boyz II Men's doing.
It's almost like it's what they're doing. I don't know that it completely works, but basically what this song is the repeating chorus with other stuff in the middle, right?
And it's like a giveaway too, because they start with the chorus.
Essentially, if we're willing to throw away the intro a little bit, you basically start with the chorus, which the a rondo will almost always do that. So this is the fourth movement of a string quartet, which is to say the final movement. And classical composers like Haydn will often use the rondo form at the end of the piece. So like the last movement of a long symphony. Why? Because it's a catchy tune. You get to hear that tune like 10 times. You leave the concert humming a tune. It's not your heavy emotional movement. It's the fun. Let's all have a party and listen to a little hook. This string quartet is called The Joke because this is the Return of the King, Lord of the Rings film of string quartets. Because it ends like four times.
Mm.
We get the refrain and then it ends And then the refrain starts again and then ends. And the joke is you it's hear it end like yeah. over and over again to the point that it's almost, you're supposed to laugh out loud, right? So is Motown Philly a rondo, right?
Well, it definitely makes it easier to make sense of the form of this song when you take all of these different pieces and just lump them together into bigger groups that yes. follow this structure of so, like the refrain, right. episode. Like it's easier to do that. It's cleaner to do that.
If we kind of take a few assumptions, like the intro and the outro sort of barely count.
Right.
The verse always happens attached to the pre-chorus.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's kind of one unit. So we have intro, yeah, whatever. Refrain, episode one, mm-hmm. which is verse pre-chorus. Refrain, episode two, which is verse pre-chorus, but also with the rap at the beginning.
Yep.
It's almost like a repeat of episode one, but not quite. And then refrain. And then episode three, which is that big epic bridge.
We're calling that bridge version. Yeah. yeah.
And then refrain and then a little outro at the end. So yeah. it almost works better as a classical era rondo because is it exactly a rondo? No, of course. But it's actually easier to make sense of the form if we think of it that way, because essentially what it is a repeating chorus with fun little diversions in the middle. That's why yeah. there are episodes, right? It's a little thing you do, right? Before you come back to the
yeah,
catchy
with
bit.
Like your lute. And whatever.
Yeah. And there's kind of with your lute.
I don't
yeah.
know. That's like what I'm thinking.
I would say lute would predate the rondo.
Okay.
A little
whatever.
Bit, right? So there's a kind vibe. Of freedom in just saying, oh, it's the chorus coming back. And whatever you want to do in between is fine with me. Right.
I love it. All right. I'm very good at it. That's why
yeah,
I like
you're
it.
Excellent. Once Nicole got the pen and paper out, she was
things
set.
Really were cooking.
Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Vatra and hosted and produced by Mark Poppany. You can email us at nevermusicpod@gmail.com and give us a follow on social media. Nevermind the Music is also part of the Lorehounds Network. Please join the conversation on their Discord server. Thanks for listening.